Hello and welcome to the show. As we wrap up this political season before the summer break, we thought we'd bring you some highlights from our interviews with Europe's movers and shakers. First, let's get you two contrasting takes on a burning issue, corporate responsibility. EU Commissioner Stéphane Séjourné defends the EU's drive to simplify rules and reduce reporting requirements on companies. But Manon Aubry, the co-chair of the Left Group in the European Parliament, insists that corporations must be held accountable.
The goal of the Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive was not the Green Deal as such, but it did impose standards and regulations on companies. It made European companies responsible for the entire value chain, including outside the European Union. So it started fairly low down the value chain. In other words, the subcontractor of the subcontractor of the subcontractor also had to be checked by your European company. Otherwise, you could be liable before the European courts. This raised various problems of legal uncertainty. We put forward a proposal at the start of this mandate to stop this legislation and start again from scratch. Now there is a discussion about overhauling these two texts. And Germany and France have made a proposal to abolish them. To do that, we still need a majority because it's a matter of co-decision between the European Parliament and the Council.
Yeah, it's a trend that is following, simply that is following Trump. Complete deregulation, move and trend through which they're going to kill, you know, one of the texts you were talking about, the duty of care, is one that I negotiated over the last 5 years. It's been adopted only a year ago. So democratically speaking, you know, killing a directive that has been adopted only a year ago is not yet implemented, that companies were started to get ready to implement is a bit of a problem, including on simplification. If you want to simplify, well, once you adopt laws and companies are starting to implement them, you don't stop it in the middle of the way. But most importantly, why is that directive important? You know, if you take all of the big multinational, take Nike, take Total, take Carrefour, take Vinci, take whatever companies, they make profits out of the exploitation of workers and the environment. So the principle is very simple for that directive. We're just saying that companies will have to be responsible for their subcontractors because they cannot make profits out of this. And they will have to be careful. It's a duty of care. So they will have to prevent human rights violations. And if there are human rights violations, then they can be held responsible and pay fine for it.
Now, young people in Europe increasingly vote for anti-establishment parties, and they have low trust or interest in mainstream media. I discussed that issue with Alain Berset, the head of the Council of Europe, and with EU Commissioner Roxana Minzatu, who talked about the situation in her home country, Romania.
This is a huge problem. You know, we are living since, would say, 15 years, a huge sequence of different crises. You know, we had a finance crisis, explosions of inequalities, rise of extreme populism. We had the war in Ukraine in 14. We had the COVID crisis, climate crisis, war in Ukraine since 22. And the impression that because our conditions of living are not becoming better, The impression, but that's the wrong conclusion, could be to say, okay, if it is not becoming better, it is because the democracy is not delivering for me. And it is not because of the democracy, it is because of the crisis, and this sequence of crisis. And we need to address this, because when I see in polls, you know, in statistics, that we have one-third of the youngest generation thinking maybe a strong leader without parliament would be better to lead a country than a democracy, you know. I mean, it is dangerous for what we can and what we want to achieve together.
I've worked before I was elected in the European Parliament on the water and wastewater sector, where we have huge shortages of engineers, of specialists, and I went into universities and high schools to discuss with the young generation, do you want to study, you know, to become an engineer in water systems or a technician? And they didn't. They applied for college and then they abandoned the university studies. And I said, why? Oh, but it's so much easier to be an influencer, to do vlogging on YouTube and this. Very difficult. Oh, it's complicated to do the technical university, even though it's very digital. So That being said, I think that we need also to create this, first of all, motivation of the young generation and of all workers to go towards certain careers, and that means quality jobs. That means that it's not just the salary, but it's also the health, safety, work-life balance, the quality of the working environment, how well valued you are as a worker as well. And it is also about a bit more than that. You've asked me about disinformation, misinformation, social media. I think we need to tackle this skill of being able to be a citizen in a very digitalized world differently.
Choose Europe is a buzz phrase these days. With turmoil in the US, the EU wants to attract international talent to boost research and innovation here. I talked about the EU's potential and its drawbacks with EU Commissioner Henna Virkkunen, and with France's Minister Delegate for Europe, Benjamin Haddad.
I see that there's a lot of interest towards European Union when it's about students or researchers and also industry, startups, companies, because in this time when there's so much uncertainty in the global scale, Europe is seen as a very reliable and stable place. In the same time when we are often criticized that we are a little bit too slowly and bureaucratic, but anyway, we are very like predictable also and very stable. And we are very strong in many areas. For example, we have 30% of more researchers than USA is having per capita when it comes to AI. So we have a very strong research, scientific community. We have 7,000 startups who are working to develop AI. But the infrastructure is a challenge in European Union that we don't have enough computing capacity because we don't have these big tech giants. And that's why we are investing now together with our member states to supercomputers. We have identified 13 so-called AI factories. Mm. And now we have also call open for interest on so-called gigafactories. So we want to have very powerful supercomputers in the coming years to make sure that our startups and AI developers that they can develop AI.
Beyond just this trade dimension, what's the question that's being asked right now? It's the question of European competitiveness. Mm. The best way to react to this is to focus on ourselves, to focus on supporting our innovators, our companies, our SMEs, making sure that the 300 billion euros of European savings that cross the Atlantic every year to fund US stock markets stay in Europe, that they stay in Europe to support the companies in AI, in quantum, in the green transition, in defense that need funding and capital, that want to be able to expand, but too often they still see too many impediments to be able to develop all across Europe because you still have different regulatory standards, because you still have different corporate law systems across European companies. So many opportunities for Europe if we make the right decision, if we take this moment as a historical turning point to focus once again on our reform and on our investment.
Hungary says it's simply defending its national interests and values. But other EU members are frustrated about its stance on Russia sanctions and its ban on the Budapest Pride March. Let's get two takes on Hungary's role in the EU with Sweden's Europe Minister Jessica Rosencrantz and the Speaker of the Ukrainian Parliament, Ruslan Stefanchuk.
It's really important to say that EU is not just a geographical union. We're a union based on values. And as a member state, you have signed up to respecting fundamental values such as rule of law, anti-corruption, independent judiciary, and for allowing people to be who they are and love who they are. So implementing legislation in Hungary that basically means forbidding pride parades, but also actually means imposing restrictions on people's possibility to meet or to express their opinions, that's a serious breach. You know, we have different tools. One thing is going into now the upcoming negotiations on the budget. Not a single euro should go to a country that does not respect rule of law or our basic common principles. And that's something that Sweden will be really pushing for in this multi-annual framework. Second is to intervene legally in different court processes in the European Court of Justice. Right now, Sweden is intervening in many cases, including the LGBT law. And also, last but not least, we have the Article 7, which is sort of the ultimate tool in the toolbox. I think we should be prepared there to take the next step in discussing what we can do after having had 8 hearings with Hungary for 7 years, but they haven't really led to any change.
So Ukraine, despite the war, is fulfilling all its obligations to the European Union. We adopt the laws. We carry out reforms. We are not asking for some excuses for Ukraine, to be given some simplified track. We honestly take our path, but that's the same kind of honesty that we are counting on from our European partners, and we want to make sure that Hungary is not a country that is Putin's veto on Ukraine's accession to EU. Putin is not the EU member. He has no right of veto in the EU, and this, I believe, is becoming a big threat for all the countries of the European Union, for all the NATO countries, when Putin is using, some countries to block the alliance decisions. So this is a huge challenge.
And last but not least, Pfizergate continues to haunt Ursula von der Leyen 4 years after the scandal first rocked the EU Commission boss. She saw off a no-confidence vote this July 10th in the European Parliament, but she hasn't seen off attention on her secretive ways. Here's EU Ombudswoman Teresa Anjinyu on Pfizergate and transparency.
And of course, I did approach the need for the Commission to adopt its rules and apply the rules that being compliant with the European Court of
but
Justice.
She didn't tell you if she was going to publish the texts or not then?
Well, we have to see that, right? So this is something that, for me, what is most important is to pass the message that this is a very important issue for my office. The ruling of the court was very clear in terms of good administration, not so much in the identification of the text messages or documents or not, but let's say that implicitly it did recognize that text messages are documents. And this is important to guarantee that the system is well done in terms of, let's say, record management when it comes to the recording and the retention of messages. And the court was clear. The Commission should have done more in saying if it has or not the messages it deleted automatically or not, change the mobile. So these are questions that will have to be addressed by the Commission, and hopefully they are committed to address and be compliant with the court cases.
I hope you enjoyed those interviews. I'll be back in September for a jam-packed political season. Do join me then.